very good Tuesday. Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature agricultural news reports, I'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news headlines, and I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
Get ready for the 2023 Crop Consultant Conference in Visalia, California on September 27th and 28th, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors. This two-day event will feature a combined 44 hours of live and online continuing education units for attendees in the heart of California, a trade show, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. Come join CCAs, PCAs, growers, and industry professionals at the Visalia Convention Center to hear from researchers and colleagues on the latest in agriculture. Registration is now open at progressivecrop.com/conference.
We're waking up to a new dawn in agriculture, a better way, where farmers stop working the soil and start working with it. At Huma, our carbon-rich, humate-based products improve soil health and fertility, deliver nutrients more efficiently, and reduce crop input costs. Welcome to Humix Solutions with a human touch. Visit huma.us to learn more.
Raw cheddar cheese produced and packaged by Raw Farm LLC of Fresno County is the subject of a statewide recall and quarantine order announced by California State Veterinarian Dr. Annette Jones. The order applies to Raw Farm cheddar packaged in 1 pound or 16 ounce blocks with a code date marked on the plastic wrapper of Best Buy 3/16/2024. Consumers are strongly urged to dispose of any product remaining in their refrigerators, and retailers are to pull the product immediately from their shelves. The current order does not include other lots or products from Raw Farm LLC. CDFA found the salmonella bacteria in a routine sample collected at the Raw Farm LLC manufacturing and packaging facility. No illnesses have been reported. Symptoms of salmonella infection include fever, stomach cramps, and diarrhea that may be bloody. Some people may also have nausea, vomiting, or a headache. Most persons infected with salmonella develop symptoms within 6 hours to 6 days after exposure. While most individuals recover in 4 to 7 days without medical intervention, some may develop complications that require hospitalization. Children younger than 5 years old, adults who are 65 years old and older, and people whose immune systems are weakened from certain medical conditions or their treatments are at highest risk for more severe illness. For the exact batch number of the cheese, log on to the California Department of Food and Agriculture website. San Mateo County's agriculture industry took another hit as drought conditions lingered last year, with output shrinking by nearly 6%, according to a new county report. Releasing the findings recently, the county said the industry's value dipped to $92.2 million in 2022, down from $98 million a year before. Some growers made the shift to field crops like dry beans, grains, and hay, but it wasn't enough to offset declines in other crops, according to officials. Accounting for more than $55 million in production last year, floral and nursery crops were the county's largest commodity, but production totals fell more than 8.5%. Vegetables saw a slight decline, valuing $20.65 million, down from $21.1 million. Brussels sprouts were the most valuable locally grown vegetable, generating $8.25 million in value last year. The county notes that January was the sixth largest on record since 1895, with rain totals measuring barely a half inch of precipitation. That was followed by the third driest February. Fortunately, this year was a much different story, including nearly a foot of rain that fell in January. California Representatives Mike Thompson and Doug LaMalfa, along with California Senators Dianne Feinstein and Alex Padilla, have announced the introduction of the Agricultural Emergency Relief Act to create a permanent structure at the Department of Agriculture to provide relief for farmers who lost crops due to natural disasters. While Congress routinely provides relief for farmers impacted by natural disasters, the lack of a permanent program has resulted in multiple administrative changes, which can cause unnecessary delays in implementation and confusion for farmers. California has been ground zero for the impacts of climate change, and farmers and growers in the state and across the country are seeing the impact of climate-related disasters on their crops, according to Thompson. He authored the legislation to create the Emergency Relief Program to provide the agricultural community with financial relief to cover disaster-related crop losses. And he says, as climate change continues to worsen, it's clear that this program needs to be made permanent. The Agricultural Emergency Relief Act would create a permanent structure of the USDA's Emergency Relief Program. include as eligible disasters, droughts, wildfires, floods, hurricanes, derechos, excessive heat, excessive moisture, winter storms, and freeze events, including polar vortexes. Require farmers to apply for relief payments to purchase crop insurance for 2 years after receiving a payment, and allow payment calculations to be based on indemnities reported to USDA on losses and revenue to better accommodate specialty crop growers. The bill would also allow Congress to continue to appropriate supplemental disaster funds in response to the level of damage incurred in a specific year or event. Hundreds of strawberry growers, researchers, and agricultural stakeholders from California gathered for the Cal Poly Strawberry Center Field Day, the largest research and education event for the California strawberry industry held every year. The event showcased the latest in strawberry innovation and provided attendees with resources to better combat challenges faced by strawberry growers while introducing new technologies. The Strawberry Center was formed in 2014 as a partnership between the California Strawberry Commission and Cal Poly, with a goal of increasing the sustainability of California's $3 billion strawberry industry through research and education. Recently, the Strawberry Center was awarded a $1 million reoccurring federal grant to expand its research in strawberry automation. Now in its seventh year, the Strawberry Center Field Day spotlights the latest research findings in automation, entomology, and plant pathology. Projects that were highlighted include non-chemical pest management solutions involved in optimizing bug vacuum and use of UVC light, automations to improve workplace efficiency and safety, such as the hoop house arch remover, decapper, and crosshole puncher burner, and solutions for controlling and mitigating soil-borne pathogens, including the use of cover crops, plant breeding, and moisture control. California's strawberry farmers are among the most progressive and environmentally conscious growers in the state and the world. They continue to lead, evolve, and implement the most sustainable farming practices and ways to grow strawberries, which includes the research and innovations coming from the Strawberry Center. Wildfires are common nearly everywhere in California, from the Sierra Nevada foothills to the North Bay wine country to the canyons of Southern California. With new housing developments spilling over from cities into open spaces, rising temperatures from climate change and overgrown forests, the risk a spark will burn down homes has only grown. The devastating economic effects became clear in 2017 and 2018 when massive wildfires in Northern California wiped out nearly two times the combined underwriting profits for insurers in the state for the prior 26 years. With fewer or no options for insurance, homeowners in fire-prone areas have had to shell out more money for coverage, sometimes from unregulated companies. Some bills have gone up tenfold, reaching the tens of thousands a year. Some have had no choice but to sign up with the more expensive FAIR plan, a pool of insurers required by state law to provide basic insurance as a last resort. Statewide, the total number of FAIR plan policies nearly doubled between 2018 and 2021, and new FAIR plan policies more than tripled between 2018 and 2019. The shift is concentrated in highest risk areas. For example, the FAIR Plan's exposure in Lake Arrowhead, a mountain resort community in Southern California, went from $768 million in 2018 to $7.44 billion in 2022. Ocean Mist Farms, the leading grower and marketer of fresh artichokes in North America, was presented with the International Fresh Produce Association's Food Service Conference's Chef's Choice Award at the annual show, which was held in Monterey in late January. The award-winning dish was developed for the artichoke giant and prepared for the show by Ocean Mist longtime corporate chef Tony Baker. According to Chef Tony, artichokes are the incredible edible thistle, healthful, nutritious, fun to eat, and easier to prepare and cook than most people think. The risotto recipe that he used can be found on the Ocean Mist website, along with a variety of other artichoke recipes.
We've talked about citrus wonglong being on the show before, its potential to devastate the California citrus industry and what's being done to address the disease, but we haven't talked about what the grower or the consultant can do in their grove when it's actually here. Improved plant nutrition to continue citrus production in HLB-infected trees can be a viable strategy in mitigating the disease's effects. CCA and certified professional agronomist J.W. Lemons, who's been working in citrus for decades, is a supporter of this strategy and encourages consultants and growers to prepare for HLB's eventual arrival in more California counties. The key is getting the trees as healthy as possible before this occurs.
When this disease, this bacteria, gets into the phloem of the leaf in the trunks of the trees, it restricts everything the tree needs for survival. So the uptake of nutrition, the uptake of water is greatly reduced and impaired. And if we can offset that slightly, we can extend the life and the longevity of that tree, of that grove, of that orchard for that grower for possibly years. I experienced and interviewed a grower whose family had had other similar orchards wiped out, and they started a good balanced nutrition program just head on into it. Not your normal nutrition program. We all know that. We can get all that information from UC Davis and from Florida State and from all the places who have done research on plant nutrition and citrus for years. All that information is available. But when you take the tree and the bacteria damages the ability of that tree to do its normal process, then the normal nutrition program that we use is just not enough. If you're putting on 10 pounds of something and you need 10 pounds to go in that tree, and the tree is only able to take up 3 pounds now because it's been restricted by this bacteria, then you can see the devastation that's going to take place. So when we look at it, just be prepared, get the trees as healthy as we possibly can prior to our infection reaching us, prior to this disease coming in, so that we know our orchards out there. We know that citrus grove. We know all the varieties that we have and what they need. And then we know how to change that if we see any indication that that disease or that infection has come into these various orchards. Then we need to uptick that. We need to change our strategy. We may need to add more. We may need to add a different type of nutrition. If we think like that, and we continue on with the rest of our science, mating disruption and spray timings and netting to cover trees, and new varietals are being developed right now, but all of that stuff is just a Band-Aid to try to keep the infection out of the trees or to come up with a tree that's resistant to it. And that's a ways off. I don't think it's going to happen fast enough. If the disease comes in, that we could get enough new trees to tear all of our production out and replant them, it doesn't make economic sense. So we have to count on the trees that we have, and we have to treat them better, more efficiently with nutrition and biostimulants, of course. Anything that we can do with our technology to continue to get the health of that tree up so that it can help us fight against what is inevitable, the infection.
Lemons explained what this type of nutrient program would look like in terms of timing, fertilizer type, and other measures.
The roots are restricted and cannot take up nutrients and water the way they normally do. So if that's the case, then there's two ways to approach that. Improve that uptake on the existing roots, or do something with a nutrient program that's going to increase the root production. Increased roots means more avenues for the water and for the nutrient to get into the tree. And the same goes for the leaves. How, you know, if you are doing the right thing to the tree to keep a normal size leaf there, then your chlorophyll production and action is taking place in a normal way. Therefore, sugars are produced in a normal way. Soluble solids are higher, so you don't get the bitter taste. And if you're using a good balanced program with potassium, we know helps get the fruit colored at the end of the season. So these things that we do anyway to get a beautiful piece of fruit with a healthy rind, uniform size, larger size, better leaf production, better chlorophyll production. We're already doing that. That's my normal program. But because I know these things work and can increase this operation in the tree, this process in the tree, then I have to look at that and go, okay, well, if I can tick that up, I know I can produce more sugar by putting in nutrient A, nutrient B, whatever the case might be. Then I need to make sure that I'm putting adequate nutrients down where the tree is restricted in its uptake, and or finding a new avenue for that nutrient. Maybe going to more foliars than we've used in the past. And foliar programs, trust me, were the saving grace for a number of citrus groves in Florida. Worked exceptionally well if you're putting the right cocktail together. The right amount of nutrients at the right time changes because the tree has changed. So critical times, you know, when you're developing your developing a young tree, flower, bud development, fruit set, sizing, bricks, production, your sugar has to be there, and even the color, then the concept of well-balanced nutrition changes. It's still the same times, pre-bloom, full bloom, post-bloom, all of these critical times that we know that we need to feed the plant, but we need to balance that and make sure that the right amount of material is getting in. And using the old programs may not do that. We might have to change our way of applying nutrient balance.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Jahlstrom.
This segment was sponsored by Polymer Ag, makers of Anti-Stress 550, the climate stress solution. Find out more at polymerag.com.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is partnering with the Community College Alliance for Agriculture Advancement to strengthen the nation's rural workforce. Through this partnership, USDA and the Alliance will provide community college students in the Midwest with the resources and skill sets that will help them to advance in careers in agriculture and rural economic development. This will help to ensure America's rural communities have the leaders and workforce they need to thrive, according to USDA. For more information on the partnership, go to rd.usda.gov. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has set a federal milk marketing order hearing for August 23rd in Carmel, Indiana. Senior Vice President of Membership Services and Strategic Initiatives with the National Milk Producers Federation, Chris Galen, says that National Milk is pleased that their proposal will be a focal point at the hearing, as dairy farmers and processors have been calling for a hearing to modernize a system that sets minimum milk prices and marketing orders. The last major update was in 2000.
They will take testimony from witnesses about ways to change and hopefully improve the federal milk marketing order system. The good news is that basically the full scope of National Milk's proposal to direct the dairy industry in a positive way, that is going to be the focal point of a lot of it. The USDA is looking at other proposals as well. They rejected a number of proposals that don't really fall into the scope of what USDA is trying to do. But at least we're confident here that the key things that we're trying to do on Class 3 prices, on Class 1 pricing, on some of the other technical issues, those will get a good vetting and good consideration.
Galen points out that continued milk marketing order reform work is at the mercy of a threat of a government shutdown over the spending bill. With a divided Republican-controlled House and Democratic-controlled Senate, it is unclear whether lawmakers can avert a government shutdown when they come back from recess in September. The deadline to pass the spending bill is October 1st. As Congress is in its August recess with a spending battle looming in the fall, including over agencies that President Joe Biden has bolstered to tackle climate change and aid marginalized communities long burdened by pollution, the Senate Appropriations Committee has passed its spending bill for the Department of Interior, Environmental Protection Agency, and other agencies involved in energy and environmental policy. The panel released final text and bill reports late in the night. Neither the full House nor the Senate has voted on their interior EPA title yet, but there is plenty ahead to separate the two. The House bill published by Republican lawmakers is full of budget cuts and policy riders that are unlikely to garner support in the Senate. At the same time, hardline GOP conservatives will not be on board with the level of funding proposed by the Senate Democrats and are rallying for more spending reductions. It sets the stage for what could be a hectic September as lawmakers struggle to keep the federal government open. Funding runs out at the end of September. What has been USDA's role in the Farm Bill process? USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
The process of crafting a new farm bill is into its final key phase now. What's been the USDA's role in this process?
Having served as a U.S. representative, I know that it's Congress that writes the farm bill.
Not the USDA. Deputy Agriculture Secretary Xochitl Torres-Small told us that a few administrations in the past have written their own versions of farm bills and pushed those to lawmakers. She says that's not the approach of this administration instead.
USDA stands ready and is very much engaged in providing technical assistance and making sure that we serve as a voice for farmers and ranchers and rural people and people who depend on SNAP and our mini nutrition programs, that when we get asked, what do you think about this program or this change, that we're reflecting the many customers that we serve.
But again, she says USDA's role is to assist lawmakers as they write the new farm bill. The current bill expires in less than 2 months. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The National Grocers Association has promoted Chelsea Mattson to vice president as she continues to lead the nonprofit arm of the trade association representing the independent supermarket industry. Mattson has embraced numerous challenges and opportunities, including taking over leadership of the foundation a year ago. That, according to Greg Ferreira, NGA president and CEO and NGA foundation president, including successfully launching the Gus Nip Technical Assistance Center and most recently the SNAP EBT Modernization Technical Assistance Center, both of which are instrumental in supporting the independent supermarket industry's important role in feeding communities across the country. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service Spotted Lanternfly Strategic Planning Working Group has released the Spotted Lanternfly five-year strategy for fiscal years 2024 to 2028. APHIS brought together the working group in August of 2022 with representatives from APHIS, the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, and the National Plant Board. The working group developed a unified approach to reduce the spotted lanternfly spread and impacts through the effective use of available state and federal resources. Over the next 5 years, the federal and state partners will work to limit the spotted lanternfly's advancement as they further scientific research that will help them to develop better pest management tools and options. That, according to USDA Marketing and Regulatory Programs Undersecretary Jenny Lester Moffitt, the five-year strategy prioritizes the following goals: effectively limit the advancement of spotted lanternfly and efficiently respond to its introduction within federal and state authority and resource availability, support continued scientific research towards practical management and risk mitigation, and establish a consistent national and state-level outreach message and educational campaign for the public and industries at risk for spreading the spotted lanternfly. Lanternflies prefer to feed on the invasive tree of heaven, but they also feed on a wide range of crops and plants, including grapes, apples, hops, walnuts, and hardwood trees. As resources available are limited, developing a strategy in coordination with the states to address this invasive pest is critical. In addition to representatives from APHIS, the Spotted Lanternfly Strategic Planning Working Group also includes National Agricultural State Departments of Agriculture and National Plant Board State representatives from California, Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, New York, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Washington, and Virginia.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.